A pleasant good morning wherever you are. Welcome to the 18th day of January 2020 broadcast of Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead. It is always, that's me. Well, we're coming to you with the miracles of modern technology and the magic of 21st century broadcasting through the renowned studios of Radio 1490 WGCH in Greenwich, Connecticut, USA. We are also broadcasting from 105.5 FM in Stamford, Connecticut, and also streaming online to all four corners of the world through WGCH.com anywhere. We've got a great show for you today. You know, we're counting down. We're 1 week away from Lunar New Year. So without further delay, let's get started.
Coming up on today's show,
3 years ago in 2017, I welcomed Larissa Lam and Baldwin Chu to the Marvels of China Pathways to the Pacific Rim show. Now, the occasion was the release of a documentary short film they produced titled Finding Cleveland. It was a history of the Chinese in the American Deep South, specifically the Mississippi Delta region. Now, we're featuring an encore rebroadcast of our conversation from that time because in March 2020, just a couple of months from now, Baldwin and Larissa will be releasing Far East Deep South, a 75-minute film expanding upon their first one. You'll hear about how you can help make their dream film come true. And we're also a week away from Lunar New Year Spring Festival. We'll have all this and more as the show unfolds. Don't go away.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these important messages.
This is Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead on Radio 1490 WGCH.com anywhere, and now on 105.5 FM, Stamford, Connecticut, USA. Contact me anytime by email at radioasiatoday@gmail.com. Learn more about the show at radioasiatoday.blogspot.com. Can't listen in real time? Well, we understand, and we've got you covered. All of our shows are freely available through the news blog on podcast.com. SoundCloud.com, and the shows and host section of WGCH.com. You're invited to support the show in any amount through our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com. Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead broadcasts to the world every Saturday morning starting 10:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. As always, thank you for your interest and for listening. It's a new year. I'm inviting you to do something extraordinary. A new approach to modern health, created by nature, crafted by Modir. At Modir, they believe you deserve safe, effective, and clean products you can use daily. Modir is committed to helping you reduce, even eliminate your exposure to controversial chemicals so you and your family can enjoy a safe, healthy home environment. Do you know I use Modir's award-winning Super Nutraceutical Liquid Biocell featuring its patented collagen AA matrix? It's true. Say yes to Modir. I did, and I love it. Learn more at modir.com. That's spelled M-O-D-E-R-E.com. Call Rosalind at 808-394-5694. Again, that's Rosalind at 808-394-5694. I extend my sincerest thanks to the following for making the January 18, 2020 broadcast possible. Catherine Latnier and John Mickey Robinson of here in Greenwich, Connecticut. Sue Hill McClenachan, also of Greenwich, Connecticut. And Kevin M.J. O'Connor of the Jeffrey Matthews Group. And listeners to Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead on Radio 1490 WGCH, Greenwich, Connecticut, USA, FM 105.5 in neighboring Stamford, Connecticut, and WGCH.com anywhere, live streaming globally over the internet.
Welcome to Conversations with Jeffrey Bingham-Mead, your host.
Before we get to my encore conversation with Baldwin Chu and Larissa Lam, I have to be honest with all of you and mention that I had a very, very different show originally planned to air today. If you listened last week, you probably heard that I was going to announce a lot of Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year, Spring Festival events, and that was all we were going to do today. Well, something happened on January 16, just a couple of days ago, at the Second Congregational Church here in Greenwich, Connecticut. I attended a very, very memorable service celebrating the life of a gentleman by the name of Joe Happy T. M. Jr. He was Chinese-American, a descendant of Chinese railroad workers who built the Transcontinental Railroad in the 19th century. Two of his relatives are friends of mine in the Second Congregational Church, and that would be Jim Lee and Mamie Lee. And the thing is that you see, this was from about maybe 3 years ago that I learned about the Mississippi Delta Chinese through a program that was officiated, I guess for want of a better word, by Larissa N. Baldwin. It was the showing of a remarkable documentary short film they had produced called Finding Cleveland. There are many people in the younger generation of all different cultures and backgrounds in the United States and beyond who are going back to their roots, and they are rediscovering, if you will, who they were or who their ancestors were. And in this particular case, it was the Chinese Americans in the Mississippi Delta region. It was a remarkable movie, and I still keep in touch with Baldwin and Larissa. And it so happens that at this service that there were many relatives, especially of the younger generation, who attended this remarkable man's service at the Second Congregational Church here in Greenwich. One of the things that impressed me about this was the fact that there were so many of the younger generation there. I got to speak to a few of these people. And I have to tell you that in all honesty, if this is what America is and is becoming and everything, then we are in very, very, very good hands, in my not so humble opinion. And it was just such a remarkable experience in learning about this wonderful man, Joe Happy M. Jr., learning about his roots in the Mississippi Delta region. By the way, he is featured in the movie that I mentioned before that Baldwin and Larissa are producing and releasing in March. It's called Far East Deep South. So I went back into the archives and I found the conversation that I had with both Baldwin and Larissa about their original movie called Finding Cleveland. Again, it's a history of the Chinese in the American Deep South, specifically in the Mississippi Delta region. And I was so moved by this experience that I had at the memorial service that I wanted to broadcast this again. By the way, I have invited Baldwin and Larissa to come on the show in the not too distant future to talk about the new film that will be coming out, how you will be able to see it, and also to help make their dream film production a reality. So without any further ado, this is my encore conversation that we are rebroadcasting from 2017. This is me with Baldwin Chu and Larissa Lam, and we are talking about a remarkable short film that they produced called Finding Cleveland.
An emotionally gripping tale is what John Jung, author of Southern Fried Rice, calls Finding Cleveland, Where Far East Meets Deep South. This documentary short film by Larissa Lam and Baldwin Chu details their search for family roots that took them to Cleveland, Mississippi in the American South. It is my pleasure to welcome Larissa Lam and Baldwin Chu to Conversations.
Baldwin and Larissa, thank you very much. Now, first of all, I want you to tell me and the listening audience a little bit about yourselves.
Ladies first.
Okay, well, my name is Larissa Lam, and I'm a recording artist, singer-songwriter, as well as a TV radio host. And I grew up in Southern California in a small town called Diamond Bar. And I'm of Chinese-American descent, and I love coming out to the East Coast to visit.
You're welcome anytime. Okay. Baldwin, how about you?
Yeah, well, I'm a hip-hop artist, beatboxer, but also on the side, I do a little bit of engineering. So I do have a degree in engineering, even though I'm in filmmaking and music. I do work with the White House as their spokesperson for their Stay With It campaign, which is which encourages the engineers in college to stick with engineering and not give up. And I do that via use of like media, multimedia, hip hop music, and stuff like that. But but now I'm a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and speaking of that film, Finding Cleveland, which I got to see over at Second Congregational Church over here in Greenwich. I have to ask the both of you, how did this story come about?
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely started about years ago when we just asked my father hey, who's our grandfather? But then we never really got any response. So many, many, many years later, I finally had a daughter, and just basically seeing her with my father together kind of caused a little jealousy, and I was like, hey, I never had that experience. Let's figure out who our grandfather really is, and, and let's at least, you know, take a trip to figure out who he is so that my daughter will have a knowledge of her lineage.
Yes.
So we started probing my father again, and eventually he told us, hey, we're not going to China. It's in Mississippi. Her great-grandfather are in Mississippi. So I led my brother to say, let's just go out there. Mm-hmm. We don't care. Let's just go and let's look for the grave.
Now, I have to, by the way, how did you, so did you fly? Did you drive from California? How did you get to Cleveland, Mississippi?
Well, that's a funny story in itself. We actually flew in from three different locations. My parents flew in from Northern California. We flew in from Southern California. And my brother and his wife flew in from, Larissa, where are they coming from?
They came from Peru.
Peru. Because they were on vacation.
They went to Machu Picchu, and then, I mean, they live in Southern California, but they decided to go to Machu Picchu before going to Cleveland, Mississippi. So talk about culture contrast there.
Yes, I was just going to say, that's a very colorful way to go to Cleveland, Mississippi, by way of Lima, Peru. I think that's pretty great. Now, I have to ask you, of course, this was a very important and meaningful journey for you, both, you know, in terms of, you know, finally going to this town that where you have these ties. How cathartic was your journey to Mississippi?
Well, I think this was cathartic on many levels. I think it was probably most impactful on Baldwin's father, Charles. Uh-huh. He grew up without his father. I mean, you know, that which is kind of the premise of our film is that his father, K.C. Liu, left China. The last time he saw him was when Charles was only 1 year old. And so I think all his life he thought his father had abandoned him. And, you know, Baldwin and his brother Edwin kind of grew up without a grandfather and not knowing any answers and not knowing a whole lot about, you know, that side of the family. I remember when we first met and then even after we got married, I asked Baldwin, like, oh, so what was your dad's side of the family? And he had, like, not a lot of answers for me. And so I think going to Mississippi and discovering what we discovered there was something that, you know, not necessarily lifted a burden, but I think rewrote, I think, the narrative of feeling completely abandoned. Of course, it didn't replace the 70-plus years that Charles, you know, grew up without a father, but in a sense to know that his father sacrificed so much and actually, you know, ultimately, you know, loved him through some of our discoveries, I think was, you know, extremely cathartic.
I'm just going to let Larissa fly with that one because she actually had a better grip on that than I did because my father actually didn't want to talk to me about any of that stuff.
Oh, really?
So Larissa was the one that was able to get him to open up and learn about all these emotions that, oddly enough, both me and my brother never knew about. But for some reason, he's going to talk to his daughter-in-law.
Mm-hmm. go ahead.
I also think that this brought Baldwin and his father closer together.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, kind of a little bit of a quick backstory is that, you know, Baldwin mentioned he's a hip-hop artist, and, you know, we work in entertainment, and his father has never really been approving of that. You know, the engineering was great, but especially, you know, being Chinese-American, I mean, the emphasis on education and a stable job and in entertainment is obviously not as stable. And so I think for him, you know, he thought it was kind of a fool's, you know, errand to be going into entertainment. And so I think through doing this film as well, I think he's starting to now see the fruits of the labor and also the impact that it's having on people around the country.
Yes.
He's been to several screenings, and I think he's starting to change his mind a little bit. And he's actually listened to Baldwin rap now. He'd be prior to like us doing these screenings, he actually had never like listened to Baldwin rap like live, you know, because he just refused to listen to it. So I think, you know, in another level, it's been very healing for their relationship.
I got to ask you both, you go to this place called Cleveland, Mississippi. What were your first impressions?
Definitely not Los Angeles.
There are a lot of farms and plantations.
Lots of farms and plantations, yes.
But I must say, I mean, the whole Southern hospitality thing that people talk about, yeah. I mean, it's pretty true.
Mm-hmm.
We went out there, and everyone was just so helpful. We did not expect that to happen at all. I didn't. I just felt like, you know, we'd probably be outsiders, but When we got there, the people heard about us, and they started spreading the word, and everyone just reached out and was so hospitable.
Okay. I thought what was really interesting was, you know, some people who've asked us that question, you know, will say, like, oh, did you feel any, like, racial tension? Like, were you treated differently because we were Chinese-American?
Yeah.
And honestly, because a lot of people don't know, there were a lot of Chinese-American grocery stores, grocery stores, mm-hmm. that people were kind of used to seeing Chinese. It was the fact that we were Californians that stood out. So everywhere we went, people kept introducing us. There's a family from California, and that was the big deal, not us being Chinese-American, but us being from California.
Now, my understanding, because I attended your screening at the Second Congregational Church here in Greenwich, that you were in Cleveland for 48 hours, and again, I'm not going to demand that you give away too much or anything like that. Tell us a little bit about this trip, and what were some of the surprises that you encountered?
Well, you know, in all honesty, we were actually only in Cleveland for about 6 hours.
Oh, that's all. Okay.
You know, but we were actually in Memphis for, you know, for most of the time, but it just, for storytelling purposes, it was easier to say less than 48 hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Than have to explain the timeline, but in reality, we were actually only, our first trip, we were only in Cleveland for about 6 hours, and the fact that, which is probably all the more remarkable of the revelations that we, you know, discovered, and I think what was surprising is the fact that we went literally not knowing where the gravestone was. We just had a photo. We had contacted City Hall, and they kind of got back to us pretty much right before we got on the trip to find out the location of the cemetery in Cleveland, Mississippi. But then we ended up at the Chinese Delta, the Chinese Heritage Museum,
mm-hmm.
and that was a big revelation where we found all these artifacts and just all this history about the Chinese in the Delta, and that led to, again, we're not going to, spoiler alert here, we're not going to give away the big reveal, but
we found another artifact.
We found a very personal artifact that was critical, and that kind of turned the tide for our trip, and then there are people that started coming out of the woodwork that ended up having ties to Baldwin's grandfather, K.C. Liu, and we ended up going to find, you know, where his former store location was, and all these other things that we just had no idea what we were about to find, and, you know, it just blew our minds how quickly all this happened.
Mm-hmm. But within the 48 hours, even though we were not in Cleveland for the entire 40 hours,
right.
I mean, part of that trip was in Memphis, and that's where we met additional members. Family members, not our family members, but families that used to be in Mississippi but now live in Memphis. So those were revealing. There were some revealing items that were shown to us during that time as well.
My friends, you are listening to Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead, broadcasting from the studios of Radio 1490 WGCH in Greenwich, Connecticut, USA, and WGCH.com anywhere, and also on 105 FM in neighboring Stamford. This is an encore conversation I had with Baldwin Chiu and Larissa Lam, who produced the film Finding Cleveland.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after these important messages.
Xinyan Kuale, Gong Hifa Choi. Come celebrate with the Chinese Language School of Connecticut by ushering in the Year of the Golden Rat at the University of Connecticut's downtown Stamford campus on Sunday, January 26th, from 11:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. I'm making an appearance at this celebration, and I'd love to meet you. Let's get together, celebrate, and socialize. Now, interested in Chinese food, music, history, games, and trivia? The 18th annual celebration by the Chinese Language School of Connecticut has it all and more. Have fun with the entire family with a fun-filled afternoon with delicious food, entertainment, and games galore. Spring Festival, as the holiday is also known, has a history of over 3,000 years. Celebrations on Lunar New Year's Day can be dated back to the ancient worship of heaven and earth. Over the centuries, new traditions were added and celebrations became more entertainment-oriented. Be sure to wear something red. Red is considered an auspicious color. All attendees are encouraged to dress in period Chinese attire, sing Chinese songs, and play Chinese games, too. Advanced early bird discount tickets are available through January 19th, that's tomorrow. Adults, $35. Children 3 to 12 years old, $25. Under 3 years old are free. Now, purchase your tickets at UConn, Stamford, Sunday, 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., or online at ChineseLanguageSchool.org, or a contact info at ChineseLanguageSchool.org via PayPal. Regular door admission from January 20th to 26th is adults $70 and children $50. University of Connecticut's downtown Stamford campus is located at 1 University Place, Stamford, Connecticut 06901. The Chinese Language School of Connecticut is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Now remember, my friends, that's the 26th of January, year 2020, starting at 11:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. I look forward to seeing you there. Welcome back to Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead. Of course, I am your host here on Radio 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere and 105 FM in neighboring Stamford. This is an encore conversation I had with Baldwin Chiu and Larissa Lam. They are the producers of Finding Cleveland. They have expanded that into a new 75-minute film called Far East, Deep South. And they will be on the show in the very near future.
I get the both of you, I think, a couple of rollerblades or something. I don't know.
You were everywhere
in a short amount of time. So, first of all, what has been the response to your screenings of the film that you've created?
Well, it's been pretty amazing. I mean, we just started off at testing it out at a smaller festival in the LA area. Actually, it wasn't really a small festival, but it was a niche festival, and we had a pretty good response over there. And we fine tuned the film and decided to enter it into additional festivals. And the big one that we were very fortunate to actually win was the Oxford Film Festival, which is a pretty major film festival. I think it's top 50 film festival in the world. We had a huge reception over there, and you know, a majority of the people there were not Chinese. So it was that was really great to be able to see a film festival that was not catered towards Asian or Asian Americans,
right,
except a film that was historically about,
yes,
the early Chinese.
I will say that at the Second Church over here in Greenwich, I walked in, and I was very impressed with the turnout. It was much larger, certainly, than I expected. And by the way, the two of you, I think, were just wonderful in front of the audience. I've heard, and I think you mentioned this at the screening, that you are in the works of doing an expanded feature documentary based on this film that you have created. So could you tell us a little bit maybe about what's in the works for the future?
Yeah. So I like to call it a prequel and a sequel. It's untitled yet. We're calling, the working title is Finding Cleveland 2, which is,
okay,
not very exciting. We'll have a better title in the coming months. But we basically had so much information that we uncovered, we weren't able to include it in this short. This short film, Finding Cleveland, was really kind of a testing ground, in a sense that we had no idea that the response would be so positive, and that the word of mouth has been so strong, and people are like, we want to see more of the, and people have more questions. And we, in a sense, you know, have had more questions after we left Mississippi that first trip, and we've uncovered a lot more information. And, you know, and also, you know, in light of, you know, recent news as well, I think the immigrant story and the history of the immigration in this country is all the more important.
Yes.
So we're going to be talking more about Charles Chiu, Baldwin's father, and how he came from China to San Francisco and not to Mississippi, and his struggles there, and growing up without a father and being an immigrant here and at an early age. He came when he was only 14, and you know, what even led us to have to go find Cleveland.
Sure.
And what happened after we found Cleveland, because we ended up meeting more people who knew Baldwin's grandfather and great-grandfather, and we didn't even get to talk about great-grandpa and great-grandma in the short film, and so they actually have a fascinating story too. And his, you know, Baldwin's great-grandfather was one of the founding members of a town called Pace, which is right next to Cleveland, Mississippi, which is where the grocery store was. And so there's so many fascinating elements that we want to explore, including kind of the racial relationships between the Chinese kind of being stuck in between black and white. So some of the discrimination they faced, but also some of the bridges that they built between the black community and the white community. And so we have so much more that we'd like to explore and to educate people on, and, you know, ultimately kind of showing kind of the healing process too, and how the story has brought together Baldwin's family.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the reasons that we're doing all these extending past the festival run, which is why you were able to see the film at the private screening at the Second Congregational Church.
Yes.
Was that we're touring the rest of the country outside of the festival, so that not only can we share our short film, but we can use that as an opportunity to let people be a part of what we're doing with the larger film, you know, and get people involved with partnering with us financially or even just through word of mouth as we continue to do additional screenings, just to try to get the response higher and to get more people interested in the story. And just allows us to continue to move forward with everything that Larissa was talking about with the full-length documentary.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you did touch upon in the in your film Finding Cleveland was the Chinese Exclusion Act. And if you would summarize what that was and how did you explore this?
Well, the 1882 Chinese Exclusion Act was the only act by Congress that was passed that specifically singled out a racial group by country of origin, and it was enacted to basically keep out Chinese immigrants and not allow them to become citizens.
Right.
There were some exceptions to the rule. It was a very narrow category of people that were allowed in the country who were merchants or people who were scholars and some family members, but by and large, it was the result of tensions brewing on the West Coast after the railroad workers finished the railroad, and they were kind of all around. And people didn't like the fact that they were supposedly taking jobs from, you know, non-Chinese. And so that was enacted. And it was actually renewed again in 1892, and then made permanent in 1902. And it wasn't actually began to be repealed until 1943. So we didn't get to go through that whole timeline in our short film, and certainly in the longer documentary. We want to explore that. I mean, there are the films being made that are specifically talking about the Exclusion Act. But we are going to be talking about it in terms of how it impacted Baldwin's family. As a result of the Chinese Exclusion Act, his father and his grandmother and his aunt were not allowed to join his grandfather, K.C. Liu, in the U.S. It wasn't until Charles was, you know, had to be older to be able to come to work in the store would he have been able to been let in. So basically, if it wasn't for the Chinese Exclusion Act, they would have been reunited much earlier.
Right. How have you changed?
Well, I feel like I've always been proud to be an American. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've always been very patriotic. My father, you know, retired from the Air Force, you know, 27 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I've always been very patriotic and considered myself American. But I think after this, it made me more proud to be an American.
Yes.
At the same time, more proud to be of Chinese ancestry.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, realizing that those two things don't have to be separate, that, you know, we have a better understanding about our place in American history and how it was important, and that the fabric of this country based on immigration, whether you're white, Asian, black, Latino, you know, whatever ethnic group you're part of,
right,
in this country, I mean, we were all immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
So even the Native Americans immigrated at some point.
Yeah, they came from somewhere, yeah.
So just to, I think, you know, realizing the importance of that, being proud of that fact, and wanting my daughter to be proud of that as well.
Yeah.
Well, I was a music composer and a singer, and now I'm a director. So that was a big change. But, you know, ultimately, I think I've been compelled to tell the story because I feel like our history books have done us a great disservice, mm-hmm, by limiting maybe Chinese-American history to just one or two sentences about the railroads and,
yes,
the gold mines. And I feel like if more people knew about the Chinese in this country and their contributions beyond just the gold mines and the railroads, I think they would have a different view of them. You know, I certainly, you know, like everyone else, learned about slavery and learned about segregation,
yes,
and that has been driven home, you know, and rightly so, because it was a very significant time and a tragic time in our country's history.
Yes.
But the fact that the Chinese were in the midst of that in the Mississippi Delta and were affected as well,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, I think it sets a backdrop that I think is more relatable in some sense. Because that is something talked about a lot. And also, I have kind of this crusade to now kind of change Hollywood. We, you know, we work in L.A. and do a lot of, you know, film projects,
mm-hmm,
in music projects, and I feel like every film that comes out now that has any story in the Mississippi Delta needs to have, like, a Chinese grocery store owner to, like, be, you know, historically accurate. And
yes,
so in a sense, I feel like we've taken on a greater responsibility than just, you know, showing the story about our family, but in a sense to be advocates so that there is inclusion, you know, not just for the Chinese, but also for all minority groups that are underrepresented.
Yes, everybody, yes.
Learn more at findingcleveland.com. You can also learn more about their partnership with Artists for Community Transformation, a 501c3 tax-exempt public charity, at artistsforcommunity.org.
All right, well, we are out of time. Thank you for listening to Asia Today with Jeffrey Bingham Mead. Tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. Eastern USA time. See you later. Bye-bye now.